Okay, so we've talked about the experience of medication management, both from the medication perspective as well as the caregiver perspective. Now, we're going to shift things to sort of what's around the caregiver. What kind of help are they getting? The first talk for that part of the morning is going to be additional informal and formal help for informal caregivers who manage medications for patients near the end of life, a pilot survey. Still no disclosures. We would like to again acknowledge our co-investigators. Thanks, guys. We would like to again acknowledge our funding institutions as well as our 5 participating hospice organizations. By way of introduction,
can I see the previous slide? What are the hospice leaders, Northwest and Rainbow? I used to work with 3 of the hospice.
Really? I'd be very interested because I actually collected the data from all 5 of those sites, so I'd be interested in hearing which ones once we get to the Q&A session. So, introduction. There are a lot of family caregivers in the U.S. These caregivers play a key role, especially near the end of life. Caregivers themselves need and receive both additional informal and formal help. However, as we saw to a certain extent in my last talk, many caregivers report having no help, and there is some literature out there to suggest that elderly caregivers are at the highest risk of having no help. Furthermore, there are a few studies specific to medication management on the kinds of help that caregivers get, if any. We've also seen today that there is evidence that medication management is complex, and that caregivers frequently feel unprepared or have other unmet needs with regard to medication management knowledge and attitudes. Hospice agencies provide some help, but there is some evidence to suggest it is frequently inadequate or non-standardized. The objective of this arm of our study was to characterize the additional informal and formal help that primary family caregivers report having with managing medications for a home hospice patient. The setting and sample were the same as our previous 2 talks. Our inclusion criteria, caregivers must be legal adults, they must be English-speaking, and they must be assisting a patient at least 60 years or older with 1 or more medications. We interviewed patients from 5 Chicago-based hospices, which you saw on the slide earlier, and their characteristics are displayed here. I won't bother going through them again. This is the same flowchart from my previous talk. Without going into too much detail, we started with a little over 200 referrals, ended up with 144 eligible, and finally data collected from 120 participants. The key variables collected were in many ways similar to Wendy's talk, patient demographics, diagnosis, months since hospice enrollment, and days until death, the latter variable obviously being collected retrospectively at the end of the study. In addition, the medication regimen complexity index was again used for this arm of the study. Finally, we had caregiver characteristics, demographics, relation to the patient, education, employment, income, living arrangement, experience caring for someone dying, months caring for the patient, feelings of self-efficacy regarding the medication management domains. You may be wondering what that is exactly, and an example question would be, on a scale of 1 to 10, how skilled overall do you think you are in giving medications, such as administering different forms of medications on an as-needed basis? There was one of those questions for each of the 5 skill domains which I presented earlier. In addition, we asked questions using the validated mutuality scale, which is a measure of relationship quality between a caregiver and a patient. For our key outcome, caregivers were grouped on the basis of answers to 2 yes or no questions. The first, if you have other family members involved with the patient's care, have multiple family members been pitching in to help give medications to the patient? Second question, if you have a privately hired caregiver to assist with the patient's care, has he or she been administering medications to the patient? Caregivers were classified as having only informal help if they answered yes to question 1 and no to question 2. They were classified as having any formal help if they answered yes to question 2, regardless of their answer to question 1. And they were classified as having no help, our control group for this analysis, if they answered no to both questions. Caregivers with both kinds of help were grouped with formal help due to small n, and the fact that their characteristics were a little more similar than comparison with caregivers with only informal help. For our analysis for this study, we conducted univariate analyses using frequency distributions for our categorical variables and the usual means and standard deviations for continuous variables. We then ran a series of bivariate generalized logistic regression analyses, comparing caregivers with only informal help to caregivers with no help, and separately comparing caregivers with any formal help to caregivers with no help. We also conducted a sensitivity analysis, basically double-checking our categorization of caregivers with both kinds of help. We compared our results and didn't find any huge differences, so we are presenting our results as we ran them. To proceed with our sample characteristics, I don't believe we presented patient characteristics in the previous talk. So very quickly, the mean age was 81, most were female and Caucasian. Hospice diagnosis, 37% cancer, 28% dementia, 36% other. I believe the most prevalent of those was failure to thrive at roughly 9%. Mean time to death was 91 days. It should also be noted that 26% were discharged from hospice alive by the end of the study. And on average, they were enrolled in hospice for just under 6 months. The caregiver characteristics were reported previously, but very quickly, mean age was 60, most female and Caucasian, most were the adult child, but there were a significant number of spouse or partners. Almost three quarters lived with the patient, 70% unemployed, 23% had a high school diploma or less, 70% had incomes above $30,000 a year, 54% had previously cared for someone dying. Moving on to a description of the kinds of help these caregivers received. Of our 120 respondents, 39% had no help with medication management, 31% had only informal help, and 30% had any formal help. Of the 46 respondents with informal help, any informal help, 14, 30%, reported a family member disagreeing with the treatment plan. Of the 36 respondents with any formal help, 19% reported a hired caregiver disagreeing with hospice medications. Moving on to the subgroup with only informal help. These respondents tended to be under age 70, although that was only marginally significant. They tended to be non-spouses or partners. They tended not to live with their patient. They tended not to be enrolled in a hospice for 1 to 3 months or 3 to 6 months. And I'll come back to that point in a little bit. And they tended to have no experience caring for someone dying, although this too was only marginally significant. The any formal help group tended to be between ages 50 and 59 and Caucasian. They tended not to live with their patient. They tended to have a lower mutuality score. They tended to have some college education, a college degree, or any graduate school, and they tended to have higher income. In addition, they tended to be enrolled in hospice for 6 months or more. They tended to have a patient with a non-cancer hospice diagnosis, and they tended to have a patient with a hospice diagnosis of end-stage dementia, although this too was only marginally significant. Finally, they had tended to have patients who took longer to die from the time of the interview, again, only marginally significant. So to summarize our results, the relationship between having only informal help and time since hospice enrollment suggests that patients enrolled in hospice for 1 month or less tended to have informal help, and patients enrolled in hospice for longer tended not to. Whereas the any formal help group tended to have a greater enrollment period. This suggests that after the first month, informal help drops off. And if caregivers are slow to replace that loss of help with formal help services, they may be at risk for not having help in the period between 1 and 6 months after enrollment. In addition, there is very slight evidence to suggest that spousal caregivers and elderly caregivers may lack additional help. Unsurprisingly, there were racial and socioeconomic differences in having formal or hired help. Interestingly, non-significant associations with self-efficacy and medication complexity, which I'll come back to in just a little bit. The limitations of this study should be noted. First, we used crude dichotomous measures of both informal and formal help. All our data is based on caregiver self-reports and thus subject to recall bias. As we discussed previously, this is a convenient sample with a small sample size, both of which limit our generalizability. And this also is a descriptive study with no multivariate modeling. Therefore, causality should not be interpreted. So to sum it all up, caregivers may tend not to relinquish their medication responsibility to additional help. Future research should be done on the differences in the use of formal help, in particular among populations with limited resources, for example, income, as well as elderly spouses who may be unaware of services available in their area. Furthermore, some caregivers with low self-efficacy and high medication regimen complexity may not be getting help they may need to assist with medication duties they are either not feeling prepared for or are objectively more complicated. Further research should investigate that as well. The relationship between time since hospice enrollment and the use of additional help should be investigated. There are some complex issues to discuss there, particularly the relationship with diagnosis, as well as associations between additional help and patient pain, symptoms, and quality of life. Finally, as a policy recommendation, we would suggest more should be done to facilitate additional help services for these elderly spouses of hospice patients.